Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Rob McKeefrey, and this is episode number 262. I want to thank you guys for listening each week. Really appreciate those of you that like, share, and comment. Just helps us continue to highlight the great people that we have in our profession. Also want to thank our sponsors, and specifically Woodway, for bringing this episode to you for free. I only partner with companies that I believe in and people that I believe in, and Woodway is a first-class company through and through. If you're in the market for a treadmill, please reach out to them. If not, just the next time you see them at a conference or something, just let them know how much you appreciate them being a part of the show. This week, I'm joined by a friend of mine, David Boyle. David's got 36 years in the business, and we've spoken at a couple clinics together. He's on the board with the ASCA. He's been in the NRL, the ARU, the NBL. He's done pretty much anything you can do in this profession. So super excited to have you on the show.
Well, thanks, Ron. It's good to be a part of it. I've been watching it for a couple of years, and yeah, it's really finally to make the grade.
Awesome, man. Well, hey, you've got 36 years in this business. You've done pretty much everything under the sun. Which one of those experiences best prepared you for the coach that you are today?
Well, as an athlete or a footballer, I guess the only attributes I had was I was fit, I could take a hiding. So that was our biggest winner, and that's what I've stuck with over the last 36 years. I just keep training and keep learning.
Yeah, well, I think that's so important. I mean, I often take a lot of criticism when I say that. I think to be a great strength coach, you have to have been an athlete and had to feel the extra pressures that come with being an athlete, so you can fully understand that as a coach. And doesn't mean you can't do a great job and be a good strength coach, but I think that you have a better understanding of what your athletes go through when you're talking. You know, it's not just strength and conditioning. It's meetings, it's games, it's, outside pressures and all those types of things. So I agree with you 100% on that. You don't stay in this business for as long as you have without making some mistakes along the way. What's one of the biggest mistakes you ever made and how you learned from it?
I think I did have a job about 20 minutes away with the Dragons, and I decided to quit and move on back to Sydney, which has put about another 4 hours on my day travelling. So that was a big mistake, but it's turned out to be a lot of success as well, meeting new people and finding new things to do while you travel. Listen to your podcast.
You said you quit. What was the, without going too much into the details, like when you're a coach and you're going through a situation that is maybe not what you want it to be, what advice would you have for that young coach to how to handle that situation a little bit better?
I didn't get on with the doctor. He was trying to run the program.
Yeah.
And that was going back nearly 20 years ago.
Yeah, sure.
So I was getting blamed for all the injuries, and in the end, I just said to him, "Listen, Doc, I respect you. What about if you write the programs and I'll just stand in the gym and watch them? And then you can't blame me for the injuries." And in the end, I respected him, but I decided to move on.
Right. Well, I think that's an important lesson for the coaches that are listening. I mean, you're choosing to work somewhere as much as somebody's hiring you to be there. And if it's not a right fit, the best thing you can do sometimes is walk away and find something that is a better fit. And I think that's very important. With 36 years, you've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly. What do you think is kind of the current state of the union, the strength and conditioning? What's good about it? What's bad about it? And what's still needs a lot of work?
It's always been fascinating. I still love it. I'm in academia now. I lecture on sports performance, and I'm studying a research subject, neuromuscular fatigue in elite athletes. So I really enjoyed that side of things with sports science. and also the communication and trying to connect with our athletes. One of the big areas I think is frustrating is the hours that coaches put in now, and we've got a real glut of excess of people with masters in strength and conditioning. Right. And they have very, very good credentials, but they don't have the experience. Unfortunately, with the economic climate, clubs are happy to exploit interns, and it's really driving the wages down for our coaches, which makes it very difficult.
Agreed.
The other thing area that's hard to combat against is social media. It's just the way of the future and the way it is now, and we've got to connect with our athletes, understanding how social media affects them, and you know the other partnerships have been involved in the way they train, the way they think, and the way they have access to information just on the net.
Yeah, I think I'd love to get your thoughts on this. This is it's a topic of a lot of debate right now, whether or not we should even have internships in strength and conditioning, and for that reason, for people being exploited, or the big thing, especially in the United States, is not paying interns or things along those lines. And I see both sides, right? As an intern, you get such a valuable experience, but as a person that's ran a program for 20 plus years, you don't always have the budget to hire those coaches. So it's not a double-edged sword there. What do you think is the best way that we can go about elevating the profession to where we can either get funding for that, for those programs, or that there's more of a structured kind of pathway for a coach to get from student to professional?
I think as an organization, and we spoke about it yesterday, we had a meeting as ACA, is we've got to try to move into the school system. I know over in the States you have the high school system. We probably want to move into that area over here. Try to talk to the education departments and also even to the primary schools. I think we're the third biggest nation in the world for obesity. So if we can talk to the governments, there's the many more benefits, obesity, and more opportunities for kids to play sport if they start from a young age. Great. So yeah, as a board, we need to talk to the governing bodies in each state, try to work out and create more opportunities.
Yeah, I could agree. I always say that there's three areas that we're lacking right now, opportunities. One is the high school level or the primary school level, and get if we could put a coach at every one of those schools, which need it. They need the supervision as much as anybody, and the program design as much as anybody. I think adding what you're doing now, where you're teaching at the university level, and creating a degree in strength and conditioning, and having our coaches that have been in the profession, that have been in the practical, in the trenches, going back and teaching next generation, I think would create jobs. And I think the administrative positions, kind of that high performance manager role that's in a lot of the programs around the world, it doesn't really exist in the United States, where we don't have a lot of coaches in athletic director type positions or hiring type positions. Again, a place where people that have been in it for a while, like us, could go once the you don't want to be working 16 hours a day and counting the 20 all the time. So I agree with you 100% on that. You mentioned social media. That could be an ugly, really, really easily, and obviously there's coaches out there that exploit that, and they're all about the hype and all, there's no real substance. But then there's a good amount of coaches like yourself and others that, use social media, like you said, to meet the athletes where you're at, where they're at, and to provide credible information, and they are the voice that needs to be heard. I mean, guys like yourself need to be lifted up and listened to. Much more so than these Instagram coaches or heroes or whatever you want to say. What is your personal strategy? I mean, of being online and that balance between kind of what people would say self promotion and just trying to provide credible information.
It's a tough one. I don't get on social media a lot. Of an afternoon, because it just consumes up so much time.
Right.
So if you get on Instagram or get on Twitter, and you've got to use it. So I'm really selective when I use it, but I go through a lot of information, like everything, and do the rest of it all. And there's some really good stuff out there as well. So it's really educational. But there's so much information out there. It's really important that we connect with our athletes and listen to them and find that way to connect and communicate and build up that respect. And try to get the seriousness out of the athletes and try to relate it back to what they do. And we talk about sociology and how we connect with them. So we've got we're not really as coaches, we're not really in their inner sanctum. So the way we relate to them, it's all about the team.
Right.
And, you know, if they don't want to do something, it's about the team. Don't let the team first. You know, I don't want to lift hard today. Well, you go tell those other 15 guys you don't want to lift hard. And if they say they don't mind, well, you can lift at 50%. And then tell the opposition next week, listen, let's just run into each other at 50% because we don't feel like we want to play that hard. And that's the sort of things. I had a good coach. His name was Brian Smith. I've had him coach me, worked with him for 3 times. And he said, you know, our guys will play good when they feel good, but they only feel good once a year. And then we've got 26 games to play, so I need them to play good when they're not feeling so good.
No,
and that's what coaching's all about.
Absolutely. Yeah, you mentioned the athletes and your personal relationship with them. And again, going back, you know, 10 years ago even, you know, sports science and monitoring and everything wasn't nearly what it is today. You've done, I've seen you present multiple times, you know, you've done a great job of being able to blend monitoring with the communication with the athlete and having your thumb and your pulse on the team. What are some of the strategies that you've used to really stay connected to your athletes and communicate with them to be able to get the best out of them?
I think you can't bullshit to them. They know when, you know, you're sort of talking shit.
Right.
So you got to be honest with them. And one of my philosophies, or one of my biggest statements to athletes, I don't know everything about strength and conditioning. But I promise you I know somebody that does, and I'm not scared to ask them.
Right.
And, so you really try to get to them and try to look outside of them where their background is. Life's getting really complicated for young athletes now. Social media, there's so many things hitting them. We only get a small amount of time to connect with them. So it's really reading their body language and the tone and just try to create a good atmosphere for them.
Yeah, you know, 2 things you said there I think are so important is it's okay not to have all the answers. And I think sometimes these young coaches, they gotta feel like they have to have all the answers, and it's okay to say, you know what, I don't know, but I'll find out for you. And I think the second thing is, I mean, here's a guy that's done almost everything in the profession, been at the highest levels of sport, and you still have a group of people that you can reach out to. You have a network of people that you've built through the years to be able to reach out to when you do have those questions where you get stumped a little bit, and we all do. You know, what are some of the strategies you've learned through the years to kind of build that network?
More recently, I met you at the conference down in Melbourne, and I met you over in Hawaii at the conference there, and social media has helped us create this sort of network here.
No doubt.
I think, and for me, the ASCA has been fantastic because it brings people together and you're able to make the networks. It's one thing listening to how good the guys are, but it's meeting them, having fun and talking shop, and then being able to put your hand up and say, "Hey, I need a hand here," or "I got a mate coming over. Can you help him out?" And having that network, and it just builds up a good rapport, and just keep learning.
Yeah, one of the things you said there was the involvement in the ASCA, and it's a phenomenal organization, and a great friend of mine and plays and everybody's. Being involved in your organization, that's such an important part of the process because, I mean, I'm sure just like you, sometimes you go to these conferences, you go to these things and you're outside of a conference and people are complaining about the state of the union, but they're not willing to participate in the process. You know, they're not willing to go to the conference. They're not willing to vote for the board members. They're not willing to write the articles or speak at the events or host an event or whatever it may be. You're on the board of directors for the ASCA. What can coaches do to be more involved with the ASCA?
Well, we set up special interest groups. So wherever we're at, we're in Sydney, we had a special interest group. Nick Steele runs it down there, coordinates it.
Great guy.
And we have it at local organisations. Well, actually, it was AFL, the Giants, was last night. The month before, we had it at New South Wales Institute of Sport. So all our coaches have a say. And we have Young Hour of Power, so we have about three or four little 10-minute guys, the younger athletes and coaches get to speak. And then we have guest speakers. And they'll go on, if they do a great job, then we sort of recruit them to have workshops or do the national conference.
It's
getting more involved.
Yeah, I mean, that's ultimately what it comes down to. When we talk about building a network, we're really talking about building a community. And when you go to special interest group meetings and hang out with one another and talk shop and just become friends. Everyone, you know, it's a rising tide raises all ships, right? Everybody gets better in those situations. And Mick and David Joyce and Lachlan and everybody, Nate Parnum, all those guys that are getting involved with that, doing such a fantastic job with those special interest groups. You've dealt with your fair share. One of the biggest issues that I hear from coaches is communication with their sport coach, and getting the respect or having a voice on the coaching staff or things along those lines. What are some things that you've done through your career to build buy-in from your head sport coach, maybe a general manager or ownership group? What are some things that you've done that would be good strategies, good takeaway messages for these coaches to be able to go back and implement after they watch this episode?
So the last two clubs that I was at, my contract didn't get renewed. So
that's all right.
I guess the big thing there, if I didn't have a really good communication, I end up getting on good terms with the coaches. The first club, we had a pretty tough time. So we went to a peptide thing with the Sharks.
Yeah.
So that revolutionised sport in Australia. So it was a pretty tough 2 years. And I still had the respect of the players. So I think that was a major thing. So, and then after that, I probably got on a lot better with the coach. He did a good job to get the team together. But, yes, it was a pretty difficult period. And then the last club I was at, our coach that I got contracted to actually got the sack. So then we had a new coach come in and he coached the side for 12 months and we went really well. But at the end of the contract, he came up to us and told us that, hey, boy, we quite like you, but I'm going with my own staff. And six of us didn't get a contract with me, so we just turned over the whole staff. But that's coaching.
Right.
So I think you've got to understand the coach, and if there's some sort of poor communication, you need to stand up front and talk about it first.
Right.
To the coach and try to build up a better communication. You might keep a better job, but I think if it doesn't work at the coach at the top, if there's a problem at the top, and it filters down to the players and it could result in wins and losses, nobody wins with it. That would be a gold nugget I'd pass on to younger coaches. If you've got something to say, try to get that link with the coach and just have a talk to him about it.
Right. In sport and being involved in that process and being outside of the four walls of your weight room, I think is important. And I think what you said at the beginning there is something that a coach echoed to me at one point in my career and said, "Hey, if you want me to love you, love my players, and if you have the players, if you have the players' respect, all of a sudden now you, a lot of times you're going to have that coach's respect as well, because you're around them more than anybody, And so, yeah, I think dead on what you just said there for sure. Then we end the show with some resources here. What's the best piece of coaching advice you ever received?
Respect your players. Be a good coach, but be a good student. Keep learning.
Be a good student. You know, at some point, you know, before we end the show here, you said that earlier about, you know, just deciphering, you know, all the information that's out there. I mean, it's, you know, when we, you know, when you came up, when I came up, there wasn't nearly, there's only a handful of books on strength and conditioning, and there wasn't all these websites and all this social media and, you know, this fire hydrant of information coming in. You know, at this point in your career where you've pretty much done it all and you know more, you know, you've forgotten more than most people know. Like, how do you go about deciphering all the information that's coming in these days?
I just think I work on myself as a person. So there's a lot of good stuff that I'm really interested in learning now. So I've gone the back way. I actually did a master's in business to start off with. And now I'm doing a master's by research. So I'm really interested in what I do. And the more I've got a great opportunity, I'd still visit a lot of the clubs, the NRL clubs, and look at their programs. And I can see how good their programs are. But it's not transferring to the field. And they've got the players, so there's something else there.
Right.
And I think, yeah, we're just looking for that something, what it is, to try to motivate the players week in, week out, and just try to keep them on the threshold. So I'm learning a lot off the younger coaches, and even with all the sports science we've got, and we have a limited interchange, so we've got to use our interchanges really selectively. So they're still going to look at body language. You've got to look at when they're fatigued, is their head down, is it going? And it's so important to watch what they do at training and what happens there. So there's still a real physical and visual thing with players and coaching, a real art that we've got to really learn.
Yeah, oh, agree. 100%. Give us a book, app, and website recommendation.
Pardon? Oh, sorry?
A book, app, and website recommendation.
Okay. So my book is The Way of the Peace Warrior by Dan Millman, and my app or website is Google Scholar.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's been, and then all those go to Google Scholar. If I need to understand what a word means or a definition of something, it's so helpful there. If I need something that I need to get back to a player, Google Scholar is the way to go. Research is still very important.
Yeah, no question. No question. Well, Coach, I mean, you know, this profession's been built by guys like yourself and all the hard work that you've done. And I mean, it's just a testament. Obviously, it's no secret to me why you've had the amount of success that you've had, because of the heart that you have for your players and the fact that you're a lifelong learner. And even right now, you're going back and getting a master's in business and continuing to improve yourself in this field, and how you deal with the players, and how you look at the field a little bit differently. And so I just truly appreciate the contribution that you've given to this profession and the way that you go about your business, man. So thanks so much for coming on the show and sharing.
It's been an absolute pleasure, Ron. All the best, and I really enjoyed your show. I look forward to catching up next time.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey, on Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.